The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we begin a Wednesday. Gary, welcome to February.
Oh, yeah, it is February and I'm just sitting here going through different audio cuts from yesterday, and so thought we could probably lead the show with Chuck Schumer.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
All right. Here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
Sis, boom, rah, rah, rah. Here we go.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
You can use whatever train metaphor you want, anyone you want, but get on the Joe Biden Express now because we are not stopping.
Get on the Joe Biden Express. Woo!
Sorry, I just...
I love trains. No joke.
By the
no
way,
joke.
By the, he wasn't saying that ad lib. You could tell he's...
Yeah.
His head's down like, I have to read this.
Get on the Joe Biden train right now. It's fun for the whole family.
How's everybody doing? It was a... Interesting trip for me, my 28 miles in.
Yeah.
Nice, really icy streets. And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse over the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to be, a couple of days ago, by the time we got to this point, this was supposed to be like the end. And now it's like tomorrow's supposed to be the worst that we've had over the last few days.
Yeah. In fact, they keep extending it.
I know.
It was going to turn into rain not just a few hours ago. The forecast said by late Wednesday night it'd be turning to rain. And it really is only because the temperature is only, you know, within a degree or two.
Yeah.
So if it's 33 degrees, then it's rain. If it's 31 degrees, it's freezing rain. And we've had ice on the ground. We've had surfaces below freezing now since Sunday evening. The air temperatures have been, and then the surfaces have been essentially under ice since this morning. About 8 o'clock, I'm sitting there. I'm like, what is that noise? The city had already sent out on Monday, they sent out no garbage pickup for Tuesday. I was like, that sounds like a garbage truck. What is that noise? It was thunder. We had thunder sleet. So I go to the window. It's coming down. I've never seen that much sleet coming out of the sky. Rain, heavy snow, never sleet. And it was just relentless. And then lightning. And I'm like, all right, now we got a show.
Yeah, you got it. You got it harder here than I did south.
Yeah.
Now, Alan couldn't make it in tonight, but he almost couldn't make it in. Last night, he lives north, sort of northwest of here, and he got really hit hard. Mm-hmm. For me, it was more during the day, the snow pellets.
Yeah, and that's the sleet pellets. Yeah,
the sleet pellets. Yeah. That's what I call it. Snow pellets.
Yeah, that's what the everybody had. Yeah, yeah.
Sleet. And that's easy. That's a lot easier to drive in. But as I got here,
well, the problem is with sleet is that it only takes a minute for it to smooth over and become, you know, just a sheet of ice.
Well, it was pretty crunchy.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the first 7-8 miles, and I got on the tollway, and the tollway, you know, they plow that, they treat that pretty good. That's why you pay the tolls.
Yeah.
But that was okay. But when I got off it and still have about 2 miles to get here, every road was just solid. I mean, solid. You could skate on it.
Yeah.
So it was solid.
Right.
Where you're
right.
Going 3-4 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And
from people traveling on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, so it's, it was just, so I was going probably 2-3 miles an hour, and you even hit the brakes there, and you can feel it slide. And when you start up, you can feel it sliding. I'm like, oh boy, it's supposed to be worse here over the next 24 hours. But
yeah, freezing rain is in the forecast, starting a little bit in the morning, but throughout the day, it's going to be pretty heavy freezing rain continuing all the way till now, Thursday morning. It'll be probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, according to the forecast right now. If that holds, that's going to mean a ton of freezing rain and just a blanket of ice on top of the ice we already have.
And you see this thing, how it just goes, you know, just it's can just the same every hour upon hour. And then you look even at the future radar, and everything is still just, you know, going northeast, 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 coming from the southwest. And it just keeps coming, and it's just like, wow. But, you know, I was expecting it. And if, you know, this isn't Freezola, but the roads could be
the temperatures
as bad
aren't
as
bad at all.
Yeah, the roads could be as bad as Freezola tomorrow.
The good news is by the weekend we're back to spring like temperatures.
And hopefully it's the end, because you look at the 2 week forecast and it's like, okay, get us past the middle of February. It's like, okay, it's going to be.
Well, they were pointing out on WFAA all the recent years that we've had March snowfall.
Shut up!
Yeah.
I don't remember March snowfall.
Yeah. I think they said 2009, 2015.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it a lot?
They didn't put up how much.
Normally in February, you know, you start with the lawn stuff by the end of February.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen a few inches of snow in March in my time here in North Texas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe I was out of town. I just don't remember it. To me, it's always the middle of February. I remember we had a storm, I don't know when it was, maybe 2006, 2007, right around Valentine's Day, where we got like 14 inches of snow. Mm-hmm. It's the only time that I could look, because I live in what you call Dallas Hill Country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not flat.
Yeah.
And it's basically it's an escarpment, and it probably little rolling hills, but the hill I look at, it's where all the TV antennas are. It's the highest point in North Texas, and it's the only time that I lived here where it was completely white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you could see where the trees, sometimes you get a little bit of snow and it would, you know, drop down, but it doesn't stick to the trees.
Right.
This was such a snowfall where the whole hill was white. I remember going out and just standing out and looking at it for about an hour, just, you know, dressed warm but looking at it saying, I may never see this again, that kind of snow. And I haven't seen that again, the hill looks so white.
I went running in that snowfall in my neighborhood, and a guy comes by, and I guess he had made some snowballs off of the snow in his truck, and he tosses one at me, you know, in a friendly kind of way as he's driving by. I caught it and threw it back.
That was the time I drove around a little bit, and snow was pretty deep, and my neighbor started waving to me, and he said, are you okay? Yeah, I'm just going out for a ride. What? I grew up in Buffalo. It's nothing.
Yeah, I had some neighbors on the way in. I had some neighbors walking down the sidewalk. They were waving to me. They're just, like, checking out the ice. Clearly, they had their dogs with them, older couple, and they were just, it looked like they were just looking at what was going on with, there's a creek that runs near my house. It's hundreds and hundreds of years old, I'm told, and they were looking at that. When I left here yesterday, I didn't tell those folks this. When I left here yesterday, I pulled out a half a block north, two coyotes crossed the road. If you would have gone out the way I went out yesterday toward I-35, you would have seen them. As soon as you pulled out to this main street to go to 35, two coyotes right across the road. I'm like, yep. I see them all the time. There's railroad tracks right there, and there are packs of coyotes that travel and live along those railroad tracks. There's a wooded area that they haven't cleared, and that's been the case for years.
I saw a coyote right just coming in tonight, just running down right in front of me, was running in the residential area, just running. It just ran and then went down a side street. I'm like, wow, a coyote. You normally you don't see them a lot. It was like, wow.
Normally, I see a lot more than two. The packs that I see around here are at least four, sometimes five. I left one morning, and they're walking along the track, and they're not in a hurry. And they're headed south along the railroad track. So I stop, give them plenty of room, of course. I'm in my truck, but I roll down my passenger window when I get to the track. I roll down my passenger window. The entire pack turns around and looks me straight in the eye as if, you got a problem?
Yeah.
It was just startling how unafraid they were.
You know, I had the same thing when we were golfing one time, and I'll never forget, we're teeing off. It's a par four, so you hit the first ball, then you have to hit the second ball onto the green. But we could see this pack of coyotes. It was during the day. It was a cloudy day. And there's like 10 of them just laying around on the green.
Yeah. So, I've had one on my street at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
So we get there, and we're about 100 yards out. We all hit, well, let's hit. We hit our ball, you know, hit our balls to the green. I think we all hit the green, but nobody hit a coyote. They just, you know, it would hit, and they just sort of look. And we kept walking closer, and they wouldn't move. And we're like, this is really weird. Just keep walking, just keep walking. And finally, we get within maybe 30 feet of them, and they slowly get up, and then they all turn around, and they all slowly walk. You know, just turning around, their head looking at you like, what the hell are you doing? We're sleeping.
Yeah, but they'll attack.
And they just all slowly walked off into the woods.
Yeah, yeah. If I'm on foot, I don't approach. Yeah, because they turn. We had a really horrible attack in a town just north of here a few years ago, a jogger. And it had been happening where they had seen them and they were aggressive, but they got this jogger and tore up the jogger's leg and finally had to, I think they ended up hiring somebody to come get them, trap them, and relocate them.
Yeah, the one that really got me the one time was when we were playing, and this, the golf course I used to belong to, was right in the middle of, it was just a mile, less than a mile from where our old studios were in Arlington. And the golf course right across the street, 360, you know, that runs north and south from the airport, you know, all the way down through.
Yeah.
And right on the other side of 360, so it's all suburban, and except for the golf course. And there's woods and a little creek and everything there. And all of a sudden, I'm pulling my club out, and my playing partner says, don't move. Don't move. And we look, and right in front of us, there's a bobcat. Bobcat with the...
Little, oh, yeah, little those are pups, on my street all the time.
Little pups behind, crazy. Just walking and just, you know, glancing at us. I mean, we're talking 15 feet away.
Yeah.
And we had parked our, you know, our carts in the, you know, in the fairway.
Right.
And I'm just looking back, looking for a club. He goes, don't move. I look up. He's like, oh, I'm not going to move. He's the pups are there with the bobcat. They slowly walk off right into the creek. But, I mean, they were living in, and I've never heard of any attacks or anything, but coyotes.
I haven't heard as many bobcat attacks. Yeah. There was one I know that approached a woman that had gone out to her car, and it looked like it was aggressive. It looked like it was going to attack.
Yeah.
But I haven't. I don't recall any attacking. Yeah, I walk out one morning.
I meant in that area where of the golf course. I never heard of an attack. I've heard of attacks of bobcats, but rabid ones especially.
I walk out one morning in my next door neighbor's lawn, and I can only see the silhouette. I look over at his lawn, and I can only see the silhouette, and the size and the stride is different, much different than a house cat. And then it turned its head. And you see it. I mean, the shape of the head and the fur around the mouth and everything else. And it's unmistakable. It comes up close to the house and then goes on the other side of their house to go into the alley because they basically travel along this old creek near my house. All the animals do. I pulled out one night, and it was garbage night, and at the end of the street is a cul-de-sac, and there was a pack of coyotes down there essentially because on that side of the street, the garbage is picked up in the front of the house. My side of the street is in the back. And they were out there just rummaging through everybody's garbage. and I thought, okay, I got to pull across with my lights on, you know, because this looks really dangerous. They're just going back and forth in this little cul-de-sac, you know, having a meal. And as I pull across and turn my brights on, they go behind those houses. Those houses all sit on the creek. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things where you just have to be aware. Because there's joggers, kids walking to school.
Yeah.
You know, or walking to a bus stop or whatever. And you just have to be aware because right now, and we've had spring-like temps. So as the weather gets warm, they're out hunting whatever's out, whatever prey they can find.
We got a great show coming up. Nikki Haley to run for president. The FBI conducted a search of the Penn Biden Center. I guess no transparency there.
Mm-hmm.
That was asked to a White House representative. We'll have even on MSNBC. It was asked, and of course they just answered a different question.
The story is changing,
yeah,
too often, and this is a big deal that wasn't revealed. And I'd like to know why.
$5 million per qualified individual in reparations in San Francisco is not enough.
Told you.
For a San Francisco Democrat. DeSantis responds to Trump and his criticism of him. Hmm. New York City mayor pleads with Biden again for more help on migrants because you heard Chuck Schumer. We played that audio cut. Well, he was in New York to tout a infrastructure program and never visited Adams, you know, never got involved, you know, in the whole migrant thing at all. I'm just going to ignore it. Labor unions shrinking in the United States. We'll tell you about the black Florida Democrat who agrees with DeSantis on African-American history, that African-American history course, saying, I think it's trash. That's because of the CRT in it. Every Democrat in the House votes not to end the COVID emergency.
Mm-hmm.
That and more coming up. Plus your calls, your comments. Great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Leased owner-operators should be aware of four common revenue myths, lest you fall into the trap of mistaking revenue for profit. Myth one, concentrate on increasing revenue because costs will take care of themselves. This is not true, as costs are fundamental to the profit equation and the area where owners exert the most control to improve. Myth two, more revenue per mile is the answer to all problems. Though carrier pay packages differ in structure, revenue per mile really doesn't change much from company to company. But there can be a big difference in miles, overall gross revenue, reimbursements, and fees. Myth three, all you have to do to be successful is run a lot of miles. In reality, revenue is only half of the profit equation. Costs are the other half. It's possible to generate a lot of revenue, yet spend $1.10 to make every dollar. Myth four, you can tell how well you're doing by the size of your settlement check. The settlement check is only a part of the success picture. Miles driven, loads hauled, conditions, mechanical problems, time off, and especially costs all have to be considered. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll-free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So Nikki Haley to announce that she's running for president. I mean, I think everybody sort of knew she was going to run for president. She said she called Trump over the weekend and told him she was thinking of running, and he said, go ahead, yes, do it.
Right. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what the back and forth is there.
Yeah.
As to why she believes she can run and what her strategy is, I'm going to be completely and totally honest. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know why, unless she doesn't believe that she can win, especially, you know, against Trump. in a primary, and I'm saying Trump because DeSantis isn't in yet. You only have Trump at this particular point. I don't know what her strategy will be, except for the fact that she has said, I'm younger. But as she attacks Trump's age, he will eventually strike back.
Well, that's what the primary is all about.
Right. And so, I you know, it's like we'll talk more about that. But again, I would prefer her over any Democrat, of course. I'm just talking about her strategy in the primaries. If DeSantis runs, too, what is her strategy? What does she think is the model for beating those two?
The IRS, the world's most aggressive collection agency.
So good, you know you want to listen again with our podcast, available on our app and at redeyeradioshow.com.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so Nikki Haley to announce that she's going to run. So now you're going to have two people in, and, you know, possibly is Pompeo going to announce? We'll see. When will DeSantis announce? It was interesting yesterday because, you know, when it came out that Nikki Haley was going to announce, they talked about what she said this past weekend, where she said, look, I've never lost an election. You know, I was a good governor. I was ambassador to the U.N., I have international experience, and I'm looking, I'm like, okay, the first question I had was, okay, what's her strategy to run against? And you would have to look at this if you're Nikki Haley, you know, odds are I'm going to be running in the primary against Trump and DeSantis, right? That's what
yeah,
you're thinking.
Right.
Those are the big guns. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, her strategy could be, I want to raise my profile, you know, do the debates, everything else, and be a viable vice presidential candidate.
Right. Yeah.
Which then could, you know, catapult her to be president of the United States down the road.
Well, and the fact that she made the call to Trump.
Yes.
Is a bit of a handshake.
Mm-hmm.
She's asking for the blessing.
Which she got.
Yep. And so that sets the table for the possible connection down the road for Trump to choose her as a VP candidate. And, okay, if you look at it in recent years, the VP choices, except for the current VP, have been all about international experience. She fits that bill.
Mm-hmm.
So if Trump chose her, I don't expect him to choose Mike Pence again. In spite of the kind things he said in defense of Mike Pence when the documents were found at Pence's place, I don't think that's going to happen. And it's definitely not going to happen if John Bolton got into the primary officially. The other possibility would be, you know, a Pompeo, if you're going to fit that bill, that Mike Pompeo could be a vice president. I know everybody is shouting at the radio, well, no, he needs to get DeSantis. The dream ticket thing has been around for a long, long time. It's for both parties. You know, you get, basically the idea is you get the top two front runners in the party, and if we do that, we're unbeatable. I see the logic. It doesn't happen that way. And the reason it doesn't happen that way in this case is likely because Governor DeSantis does not want to take on that baggage. It will be hard enough for him, even if DeSantis decides not to run. He's still, and Trump runs. During that campaign, presidential campaign for Trump, whether he wins or not, there's going to have to be that dance that DeSantis does to both separate himself from Trump while supporting the nominee.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way DeSantis would ever accept to be Trump's vice president. There's no need for him to do that. Nope. He has built, and it's really incredible because he has built his own entity, which is his own identity. I'll put it that way.
Right.
His own political identity that has nothing to do with Trump, even though on the major issues, especially the cultural issues, he's in full agreement with Trump.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's going to be a delicate walk if he's not in. You know, that's going to be a very whether he jumps in or not, because you got to, in the primary, you can separate yourself, I think, a lot easier. But if he doesn't jump in and Trump is running, then you have to show support. If it is obvious that he's going to become the nominee, that Trump is going to become the nominee, then he's going to have to both align himself by supporting the nominee, but also separate himself in a way. And I think he can do that. I look at like Pompeo jumping in. I can see Pompeo during the primary debate season, if he jumps in, kind of being like, what you had with Mitt Romney in 2012, where he's going off and he's, you know, as former Secretary of State and a CIA director, he's lining out all the international threats, and he's absolutely right, and these are the hot spots that we need, and he's absolutely right, but he's just not an exciting candidate. But I could see him bringing something to the table and making solid points on any geopolitical front, you know, during that primary season, but that's probably going to be about it.
When America really doesn't care about anything going on internationally.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm being blunt here, but yep. No, that's, I mean, no, you're right. There are important things that are happening.
Yep.
But right now, everybody, when we brought it to you yesterday, when almost 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck.
Yep. No, it's all domestic right now.
Right.
It's all the economy right now, and you're absolutely right. And which was my point in saying that, because it was, you know, in borrow from Jen Psaki, as I circle back to Nikki Haley, the international experience in the primary season, everybody will give you a smattering of applause. But if you're going to connect to the American voter, it's everything is domestic right now. The international stuff, unless something happened, between now and Election Day, but it is all about domestic stuff, and it's all about the economy. There's nothing else.
If Russia shoots off a few nukes in Ukraine, yes, of course, that's going to all of a sudden everything's going to be international relationships. And if China is threatening to go into Taiwan, but the international issues aren't issues until they become issues.
Right.
If that makes sense, you don't know
until the day it happens, and who knows.
But when you look at the candidates so far, because when I look, if you take the infighting, but you know, whether it's Nikki Haley and Pence, and you know whether she wanted to, as Pompeo was saying, she was trying to get in there and wedge Pence out and all that stuff. If you take the political infighting out of it and just judge them as candidates. Again, you would have to see how they would campaign and, you know, for president of the United States and how they could perform when it comes to the primary debates. But when you look at Pompeo, he's not a weak candidate.
No, not at all.
If you say, okay, let's compare Republicans to Democrats right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at a Pompeo, you're like, no, he's got the street cred from being Secretary of State. He does. And he articulates extremely well. If you look at Nikki Haley, the same thing.
Yeah.
When it was announced, I said, okay, let me find her weak spot, you know, and I may find one as she talks and how she presents different things. But looking at it right now and making the comparison to what the Democrats have to offer. And what the Democrats have to offer right now is Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Pete Buttigieg, if you want to look at the top three. If you want to throw Newsom in there, you may have a stronger candidate, but not based on the issues and not based on what's going on in California, you know, right now in a variety of different things. He's vulnerable. He is still in the top four, I believe, for Democrats, even though he's not going to run, because Democrats are as far left as you can get. Mm-hmm. But the country is not. I still think Newsom is extremely vulnerable because he's got an advantage in the Democratic primary because he is the governor of California, but he has a huge negative against him because in the general election because he is the governor of California.
Yeah, right.
And so I think it works both ways. But I would still view him, if you talk about taking the issues out of it, how he presents himself, I still think that he is a viable candidate for the Democrats.
Yeah.
He is the most viable if he decided to run for the Democrats.
Based on their standards, yes.
Right. But if you look at, and I'm not, we know Trump, so I'm not, you know, Trump is out of this and he's running, but I'm not including him in this because we already know who Trump is.
Right.
But when you look at all the other candidates running, they all basically agree with Trump.
Yeah.
On the five, six issues, they all agree. Mm-hmm. And so you've got, you know, Nikki Haley. You're like, okay, we'll see what she does. But I don't see right now a weak spot where I would say that disqualifies her completely. What I would say disqualifies her is the fact that if Trump runs and DeSantis runs, well, then it's like, well, it's Nikki Haley.
Yeah, right.
And if Pompeo runs, it's like, well, he's just Mike Pompeo. You've got DeSantis and Trump. And what makes DeSantis such a challenger for Trump is the fact that he believes the same thing as, for the most part, the five or six issues. But especially on the culture wars, he is the one that is having tremendous success in actually implementing policy and promoting policy. And that's what and you know, Trump said that, you know, that in the first election, you owe me. And DeSantis responded. He didn't respond until a reporter asked him about it. Mm. He simply said, he didn't mention Trump. He just said, look at how I won the election. Look at the things that we've done here.
I
won the election and won it by margins that hasn't been seen, you know, in Florida. So I stand on my record.
Which is using the tactic that we've talked about. You can respond without engaging directly.
Yes.
And that is going to be the delicate dance that is done with the other, you know, GOP members that are up there on the stage with Trump. Because if he becomes the nominee, eventually you've got to support the nominee. If you're not going to go full Bill Kristol, then you're going to have to support the nominee.
I'll read you the quote from DeSantis. And he did not bring it up. He was asked the question mm-hmm. about Trump.
Right.
He goes, when you're an elected official, you have to make all kinds of decisions. You've got to steer that ship. And the good thing is that the people are able to render a judgment on that, whether they reelect you or not. And I'm happy to say, you know, in my case, not only did we win reelection, we won with the highest percentage of vote that any Republican governor candidate has in the history of the state of Florida. Mm. We won by the largest raw vote margin, over 1.5 million votes, than any governor candidate has ever had in Florida history. So what he's saying is, oh, okay, yeah, Trump might have helped me in the first one, but, you know, Trump didn't help any candidate this time around, and I did this myself.
Right.
That's the message he's sending out.
Right.
This is me. Yep. This is the DeSantis brand. And when you look at Nikki Haley, because she served in the administration, she does have part of the Trump brand. If you look at Pence, he has part of the Trump brand. If you have Pompeo, he also served in the administration. He also has part of the Trump brand. DeSantis is the only one that does not have that brand and stands as a brand alone.
Right.
Now, in the primaries, that may hurt those other three when they go, well, we already got Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already going to vote for Trump. Why would I peel off for these people? Unless Trump, they believe, is vulnerable and can't beat a Democrat.
Right, right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. And I think, you know, if you want to measure the weight of the baggage, the Trump baggage, if you want to call it that, that politically that any of them carry, I would think that, obviously, Mike Pence carries the greatest amount of weight there. I think Pompeo and Haley carry less.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's because of the nature of those roles that they were in. But, you know, but it could be enough. You know, it's hard to know. It's hard to just judge the sentiment, especially during a primary season. And it's going to be, I think it is going to be critical because it really is the question. Is it time to move on from Donald Trump or not? For the GOP, that's the question of the 24 primary season. And that will be, and I can't tell you what, you know, the voter is going to do there. I don't know. We can look at polls right now. We can look at a number of things, but that's the question that will be answered.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Earn personalized savings on commercial truck insurance with Smart Haul from Progressive. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Not available in all states or situations.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. But eventually, I mean, even though it seemed like a little bit of a love-in between Trump and Nikki Haley, that won't last long.
Nope, it can't last during a primary season. That's when you go to your corners and come out fighting. And then after the primary season, it goes where it goes. Whoever the nominee is going to be, and we'll see, you know, how that plays out. But it will be interesting to see how many of those that are everybody is talking about will actually jump in. Nikki Haley is going to be in officially, in a matter of hours, apparently.
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howes Products. Visit HowesProducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, we're Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. Oh, I love this here. The story from Fox from yesterday. Bill Maher trends on Twitter after getting slammed for being too right-wing.
Oh.
MSNBC host Mehdi Hassan said Maher was another example of a right-wing reactionary white man. The left on Twitter came out in force against comedian Bill Maher Tuesday, arguing he was a right-wing culture warrior who made racist comments against minorities and has a smug, quote, smug face, end of quote, to boot. Bill Maher trended Tuesday morning on the social media platform after CNN announced that Maher's post-show segment, Overtime, will air on Fridays during CNN Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But even before Maher's deal with CNN became public, the comedian was already a punching bag for some on the left after he has come out against woke education and accused environmentalist celebrities of hypocrisy.
Uh-huh.
Leftist and Young Turks host Cenk Unger claimed that Maher was a culture warrior for the political right.
Hmm.
Bill Maher is actually perfect for CNN, to be honest. False equivalencies, propping up right-wing culture war talking points, fighting for the status quo, and that smug face. Jake Tapper might get jealous because he might be out-smugged. MSNBC host Mehdi Hassan depicted Maher as a racist. Bill Maher is obsessed with the idea that cancel culture is out of control. Yet Bill Maher himself just got a new CNN gig despite saying outrageous things about Muslims, Arabs, and trans people, making crass jokes about Asians and using the N-word on TV. Cancel culture? Okay. Let me see what else here. Keith Olbermann, who was fired.
Well, it wouldn't be complete.
From his MSNBC gig over 10 years ago, said Maher's new deal with CNN was like him giving his leftovers to the network. So Bill Maher's leftovers will run on CNN Friday night.
He's just jealous because he's unemployed.
Mom! 1619 Project founder and critical race theory proponent Nicole Hannah-Jones addressed Maher directly on Twitter. Bill, you've obviously never read the 1619 Project. Challenging a statement that Maher made in a recent conversation with actor Bryan Cranston on his podcast. If you mean more of what the 1619 book says, which is that it's just the essence of America and we are irredeemable, that's just wrong, Maher said, pushing back on teaching critical race theory in schools. Hannah Jones shot back, last chapter literally talks about how the U.S. can be redeemed. So there you go. you knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, it's nothing new. It's the same old playbook. Racist! MSNBC. You know, I mean, I don't know because I can't measure the HBO ratings, you know, for Bill Maher. And so, and I don't know that they promote that actively. HBO continues to have him on. I'm assuming it's a fairly sizable audience, right? But
yeah,
does that translate over to, you know, a CNN? I don't know. And we'll see, you know, where it goes. But apparently a few people see it as a threat.
Look, we've been critical of Bill Maher, but I don't have a big problem with Bill Maher. You know, I've seen some of his podcasts where he sits down and has cocktails.
Yeah, he's trying to do the Rogan thing.
Yeah, like in his base. But that's okay. I don't mind. You know, like
that's fine.
You know, like Joe Rogan. I mean, look, Joe. You and I have been critical of him because of the bizarre ideas that he has held at times. But I have no problem with Joe Rogan. I mean, I can disagree with him. I can disagree with Bill Maher. Look, we've said this directly about Bill Maher. Bill Maher was promoting identity politics along with the Democrats and never criticized them until a couple of years back.
Right, right.
Black conservatives have been demonized for the last 30 years. By the Democratic Party. Over 30 years.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I first became a talk show host in 89 and then in, you know, the early 90s, especially, you know, the number of conferences I would go to because talk radio still was in its infancy. And I was new to it. Everybody was new to it. So there were a ton of gatherings. There used to be a talk show group and there used to be a ton of gatherings, you know, every year. Couple times a year, you get together with all the different talk show hosts, and you would have people like Armstrong Williams that would be there, Larry Elder, back then, and more, and they were demonized like crazy as not being, you know, they're not authentically black. I mean, the identity politics, really, black conservatives were probably one of the first targets of the liberal black leadership of the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party in the media. They were eviscerated for years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so it's been going on for the longest time, and it's only recently that I have seen Bill Maher, and that's okay. I mean, I've got no problem. If he wants to change his mind, that's fine, but let's not rewrite the history of Bill Maher. But I'm still okay with it because he wants to know what other people think, and that's fine.
No, I think that's probably, you know, where otherwise I might have, you know, drawn a line. I don't know that I, you know, the thing is that with both of them, you know, if you compare a Rogan to a Bill Maher, I think the, like the politically incorrect days for Bill Maher on ABC, that I didn't appreciate as much only because the panel, you know, it was, I thought the panel was too big. And now a more, you know, back and forth with one or two people across from a Bill Maher. I appreciate that about Rogan when he gets a guest on and they go in depth and whatever. And it could be where either Rogan or a guest makes a comment or a Bill Maher or a guest makes a comment and I look at it and go, eh. But I don't really, I still think that what they're doing is a, you know, is not a bad thing. Those are, you know, they're clearly very successful in terms of what Rogan is getting done. And I watch his stuff because clips come up all the time. I actually paid for Spotify commercial free for a while, but their app on television is horrible. And if they were to, you know, if they fix that one day, then maybe. But I get so many of the clips on YouTube from the show, I don't have time to watch a, you know, 3-hour podcast anyway. Mm-hmm. But I watch a few things that come up. And there's a lot of stuff that makes the news. And the same with Bill Maher. And I could see where you look at it if you're a CNN. I think that for CNN, it's a good move.
I think that there's some self-reflection in Bill Maher.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
Yeah, I would agree.
And so I'm cool with it. I have nothing against it. And look. No. Joe Rogan at times it's like, oh God, stop. You know, I mean some of the stuff, but I just happened to catch a clip yesterday on YouTube where he had the physicist Brian Cox on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he comes out and Rogan and basically asked him about, you know, because all we know about science and they were, you know, he got into the Big Bang theory and what mm-hmm. was before the Big Bang. Mm-hmm. And Rogan immediately took it. He goes, well, look, he goes, with science now, he goes, we find out that even though people are religious, you know, they're, you know, they may be spiritual, they're becoming less religious. Is this because of the science and everything that we're finding out what you guys are talking about? And, you know, Brian Cox, I mean, the English physicist, he's just great because he's always smiling. And he just said, look, let's not have science become arrogant. He said, said, we're simply telling you what we're learning. We're not making any judgments, basically, on religion. And to do that, he said, comes off as arrogant because that's not what we're doing. I'm simply telling you what we're learning.
And the arrogance is that often scientists do that in a way that they're saying basically what we believe should be your religion or should be in place of a religion.
But,
and that's, I thought, was a very fair answer.
But Rogan accepted it. And he was like, mm-hmm. I see it. So even though I know, you know, good God, you know, people say, well, we like Joe Rogan because he's a conservative. He supported Bernie Sanders just a couple of years ago. He's not a conservative.
Right.
And neither is Bill Maher. Bill Maher is still a liberal. I think, though, that he has seen maybe the error of the ways of the Democratic. Well, he's clearly seen the errors of the Democratic Party. I don't know if he understands the fact that he has enabled the identity politics of the Democratic Party for the last two decades.
Right.
Or he has done. I don't know if he's admitted that, but I don't have to have that as long as I can see he's coming around on the idea. I don't need somebody's confession say, okay, give the guy a chance. He's being fair. He brings on other people with differing viewpoints that are, you know, without question conservative. He had Shapiro on, our colleague, you know, because he works for the same company as we do.
Mm-hmm.
He had Shapiro on, not the Daily Wire, by the way.
Yeah.
He's syndicated by Westwood One.
Right.
That we are also. And so, and it was a very fair, you know, very, very fair, you know, discussion that was going on. I thought for as radical as the left believes somebody like Matt Walsh is, Rogan was great with Matt Walsh. Yeah. It was a great back and forth.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's fair. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's all many conservatives are looking for is it fair? Are you giving mm-hmm. them, are you just immediately dismissing their idea and screaming racist? You're like, okay, that's a decent point. Yeah, I might agree with that, but I disagree with that. And that, at least that's fair. And I think that that's what you're seeing for somebody, you know, like I said, a Joe Rogan, if you support it, and he supported very heavily a couple of years ago, Bernie Sanders, well, he's a socialist. I don't believe, and the funny thing is, I actually don't believe Rogan is a socialist like Bernie Sanders is, yet he still supported him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still working. It's almost like Joe Rogan's still a work in progress. He still hasn't, you know, doesn't have the vast majority of his ideology set down, which is fine, because what he does is he asks a ton of questions.
And it likely has to do with the experience that, you know, that he's had. I mean, he's just now kind of, even though he's been doing his podcast for years, I mean, long before anybody really knew what a podcast was, he's just now getting around to, you know, in recent years, issuing more of an opinion. They're not hardline opinions.
No, they're not. No.
You know, he will go after liberals and the cancel culture and everything else and the dangerous things that they, you know, he had Jordan Peterson on recently again. And, you know, these things that he'll break down and it's the reality that everybody sees. Well, I guess that's what I appreciate about both of them is that, you know, if you say something and it tells me that you're on that position, you're on the left, at least the response isn't going after someone and saying, well, you're a racist, you're a bigot, and neither of them do that at all.
Is that the key? Because initially we always thought the culture wars were the thing that was going to keep tribalism, you know, as you know, and keep groups as far away from even listening to the other group, as far as possible, the tribalism of the culture wars. But is it, you look over the last couple of years, especially with the liberal transgender activist movement that exists out there,
right,
and critical race theory, is that what is actually going to be something that binds many people on the left and the right together? I mean, is that what you're seeing with the Bill Maher and a Joe Rogan?
I think it's the approach. I think it is because I honestly, whatever your ideology is, isn't the point. We can have the discussion, but the left, the loudest on the left have not allowed a discussion at all because any discussion, any back and forth is considered dissent. And I think that's where a Rogan and a Bill Maher set themselves apart in that way. And that is that they don't use those tactics. They're willing to have the discussion. And if you're willing to have the discussion, I respect that all day. Again, we can call them out on certain things, but those aren't, again, I don't have to, and they don't have to call anybody a racist or a bigot or anything else. We can just have a discussion. And I think that's what people, I think you're onto something. I think that actually will probably shape the future of it. And I also think it's why podcasts, including and maybe especially Rogan's, are successful. I think that's part of that appeal.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Leased owner-operators should be aware of four common revenue myths, lest you fall into the trap of mistaking revenue for profit. Myth one, concentrate on increasing revenue because costs will take care of themselves. This is not true, as costs are fundamental to the profit equation and the area where owners exert the most control to improve. Myth two, more revenue per mile is the answer to all problems. Though carrier pay packages differ in structure, revenue per mile really doesn't change much from company to company, but there can be a big difference in miles, overall gross revenue, reimbursements, and fees. Myth three, all you have to do to be successful is run a lot of miles. In reality, revenue is only half of the profit equation. Costs are the other half. It's possible to generate a lot of revenue, yet spend $1.10 to make every dollar. Myth 4. You can tell how well you're doing by the size of your settlement check. The settlement check is only a part of a success picture. Miles driven, loads hauled, conditions, mechanical problems, time off, and especially costs all have to be considered. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
With the Love's Express card, you save up to 14 cents per gallon, $25 on tire purchases, and even more on service costs. Go to loves.com/diesel discount. loves.com/diesel discount. If you drive a big rig, you know that if your wheels keep turning, you keep earning. That's why Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running and save you money.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so when we're talking about the fact the left going after, Bill Maher and being called, now he's too right-wing and all that, and he's a right-wing reactionary white man, you know, all the labels that are coming out. And you know, we had said that I think back in 2018, so we're going back 5 years ago, when I remember saying, the Democratic Party has to moderate in some way. They can't continue to do this because a political party has to attempt to unite. Yeah. And the problem with the Democratic Party is when you play identity politics and you have the victim oppressor relationship, mm-hmm. everything is based on you either being a victim or an oppressor, and the victims eventually become the oppressors, as we've seen, and we pointed that out, as they try to expand the number of victims out there. Mm-hmm. Because something that you believe today may be absolutely fine. For example, think about this. You're a Democrat and you say, well, no, a biological man is a biological man. A biological woman is a biological woman. It's in the DNA. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Well, of course it is. You're a bigot. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you've gone from victim to oppressor. We'll continue this discussion coming up.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your
finances? We're just sort of a offshoot and just extrapolating out from the story that Bill Maher was attacked by the left yesterday when it was, after he does his HBO show, they do like a, what is it, overtime or something like that, where it's or after the show and.
Yeah,
and they put that like on YouTube or stuff like that. You can watch after. Mm-hmm. Well, the CNN's going to pick up that segment and put it on Friday nights.
Right.
So it basically be he'll have his HBO show and then the after discussion on CNN. And we were just talking about how the left slamming him as being too right-wing now, that smug face, right-wing reactionary white man is what they are referring to him as. And, you know, you and I, you know, we've talked about people that were, you know, Joe Rogan a couple of years ago, as we mentioned, you know, doing his very successful podcast and asking a ton of questions. But he used to be a Bernie Sanders supporter. So that's, if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, you have to say, well, are you a socialist or what? Well, you find out he's really not a socialist. You find out somebody like Joe Rogan is still working. I think he's still a work in progress as to what he believes. And I think he would probably say that. He asks great questions, and he has come out without question. And this is what you're seeing now. Absolutely against, you know, the left culture wars that are going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
The liberal transgender activist movement, the censorship that is coming from the left, and the same with Bill Maher. So you can look at two people that you could view as saying, you know, for the majority of their life, and Bill Maher, he's still a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan, still a work in progress, but he was supporting a socialist just a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they are in lockstep with conservatives on the culture wars, on critical race theory, on censorship, the cancel culture, on freedom of speech. And they look at this and they're just like, you know, what in the world happened, you know, to our party? And I was asking you the question, is that the tie-in that is going to unite more people that are Democrats and Republicans? Something that we thought was going to be the huge separation. You know, that was going to be the separate, because of culture wars. Democrats think this way, Republicans think this way. But Democrats have gone so insanely far that you have a ton of Democrats now looking at somebody like DeSantis. If you want to put it in the real political world, looking at DeSantis, who is fighting it in Florida and is more popular by the actual vote,
yeah,
as he states, I'd have to actually look it up, than because of how he won by more votes than any governor in Florida history,
mm-hmm,
as he was saying yesterday. So, I mean, that's actually the real world where he's getting Democrat votes. That is actually the tie-in. And when you see, for example, that the party itself, and we talked about the equality law that, you know, that every Democrat voted for, we believe every Democrat voted for, or every Democrat but one, back in the in 2021 in the House of Representatives, which would have, you know, given the transgender movement the liberal transgender activist movement a huge boost by basically agreeing that, you know, men can go wherever women are, locker rooms, mm-hmm, bathrooms, men can compete against women. That is, and we're pointing out, that's how radical the Democratic Party is. They actually believe all of this stuff. That's the party itself. Now, the voter might not, as we're finding out, for example, if you look at Florida, if you have the ability to communicate effectively, you can move independents over and you can move Democrats over, as DeSantis did in some districts that really shocked a lot of political experts out there, a lot of, you know, election experts. And so you can do it. But the culture wars are so insane. And even on abortion. You know, you saw was it the Minnesota governor yesterday? What governor was it that signed the bill, abortion to birth? It just popped out of my head, but that happened yesterday, and the majority of America doesn't agree on that. So even in the culture war of abortion,
right?
You know, they don't. All of a sudden, you're saying that's pretty radical. You know, for them to do that, because the majority of Americans, the majority of women, don't even agree with that.
Right.
As we've talked about before, based on the polling. So, you know, it's not even okay. For example, we're going to have the debt ceiling deal, you know, whatever it is. And, you and I both know it's not either way, whatever they compromise on, neither way is going to solve the problem. You know, they're playing, okay, we don't want to negotiate at all. We want to spend this amount of money, and Democrats and Republicans know we're going to cut this. We've seen even in the deals before, it didn't change where the spending went. And yeah. And so is that not, has that moved into the fiscal things, have moved into the background, and it's the culture wars and the economy. The culture wars and the economy, and maybe the understanding that when people hold these insane views on culture issues, that you better watch out about what they want to do when it comes to things like energy and education, yeah, and the border and national defense. And people are looking at this going, well, if you hold this insane thing over here, well, this is also insane over here. Because really, that's what you have from the left, on the traditional left, I think, on the culture wars, looking at their party and going, what the hell are you doing? Well, the next progression is, well, if you're insane, because it's insane. And you think, you know, the Florida Democrat who agreed with DeSantis on the African-American history course that DeSantis said, nope, because it's about critical race theory.
Right.
And he came straight out. This was Leon County Commissioner Bill Proctor, a black Democrat, agrees with DeSantis last week that a proposed African-American history course that was rejected by the State Department of Education constitutes propaganda rather than legitimate educational curriculum. He said there's a grave concern about the tone and the tenor of the leadership's voices from the highest spaces in our state being hostile to teaching African-American history. Well, frankly, I'm against the College Board's curriculum. I think it's trash. It's not African-American history. It's ideology. I've taught African-American history. I've structured syllabuses for American history, African-American history. I am African-American history. And he said, this is trash. And so you look at that critical race theory, you look at the liberal transgender activist movement, the vast majority of America disagrees with it. You know, you see to the point, get into the real world now, the number of headlines out there from the left. Oh, just because it's black men, black police officers killing a black man, doesn't mean it's not white supremacy. Well, of course it does.
Well, and their playbook was disrupted, and we looked at the situation, and like we do every situation, a case by case basis. I can't tell you what was in the minds of those officers that night in Memphis. I can't tell you. I can't tell you why that happened. But when you scream racism, you're using the old playbook, and it doesn't apply. It absolutely doesn't apply, but it really is all they have. Is there a problem with qualifications, hiring standards, creating a unit like the Scorpions unit? All of these questions are very valid questions, but all of them will be answered, hopefully, through the investigation, which is how you approach it on a case-by-case basis. And that's the game.
Now, here's Van Jones. Here's the headline. Police were black. They might still have been driven by racism. I mean, they just can't. They can't get over it.
They can't stop playing the game.
It doesn't matter what it is. And then, well, you know, all police officers, you know, they're all. Remember this in 2020, black police officers are not police officers. They're blue. They're right. Blue. They're not black.
Right. Right.
That was an NAACP executive, I believe, out of South Carolina that said it. Right. You know, one of the times it's like, no, that we're going to demonize you. You're not truly black if you're a police officer. Mm-hmm. You're not truly black if you're, you know, if you're a conservative. All blacks must think alike.
Right.
Well, that's the basis of racism, that all blacks are alike. all whites are alike.
That if your skin color is this, then your mindset right. must be this.
And we know that.
And if it's not, that something is wrong with you or right. somebody else is controlling you.
And we all know that's bull. We all know individuals think differently. And when you try, when you play the identity politics, and they know it's a problem, Democrats know it is, but they can't. It's like you get on the drug of identity politics, you can't get off it.
By the way, it was Minnesota that signed it, Governor Tim Walz, that signed that abortion bill into law, and it, with no restrictions.
Right, exactly. And so that, I mean, that, you know, the it came out, it's like, okay. And like I told you, the discussions I had after Dobbs was, that decision came down from the Supreme Court. By the way, Obama yesterday, you see, he was asked a question. What about the COVID emergency? Well, not until the Supreme Court votes on it. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's like he was saying stuff yesterday. I'm telling you.
Obama. Did you mean Biden?
Biden.
Yeah.
Say Obama again?
Yeah. I didn't see Obama, but maybe
it was,
I missed it.
Biden.
Yeah.
It was Biden, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Biden yesterday was asked that question.
Well, I mean, he's expecting the Supreme all this to go to the Supreme Court? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Is that what they're preparing for, and he let that slip?
I don't know, because he said, you know, it's supposed to be gone
in May.
May 11th.
Right.
I was hoping that they were going to do it May 1st, which is
May Day.
The communist holiday.
Right. Right.
There's a tie-in somewhere with that statement.
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
And, but, you know, this is, I do wonder about the conversation, though. When you look at the issues and the conversation, it depends, you know, where you're listening, right? Where you're watching the conversation. But I think people are attracted to more and more these days, a more open conversation. I think that is the appeal of a Rogan or a Maher or, you know, any of them. And the left absolutely hates that. That's why it's imperative for them to label it. MSNBC can't stand the fact that there might be an open conversation, right? And it's not that Bill Maher won't debate or Rogan won't debate or others like them won't debate. They'll debate. If they've got an issue or question with what you said, Bill Maher has absolutely no problem. But everything has gone so far, and if you look at the one example, the Minnesota bill signed into law by Governor Walz there on abortion, no restrictions, including no requirement to notify parents if a teenager goes in for an abortion. How far do they go before they break that pendulum altogether? Or have they already gone there?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Check out all the latest in news, events, trucking information, and podcasts at Red Eye Radio's website at RedEyeRadioShow.com. That's RedEyeRadioShow.com.
If you drive a big rig, you know that more time on the road means more money in your pocket. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is the...
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Consumer confidence. We'll have the latest on that. That figure came out yesterday, so we'll have the latest on that one for you.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got? Is there anything else going on?
Things and stuff.
Oh yeah, the vote for to end the COVID health emergency. Every Democrat voted against it.
Yeah.
And we had said the reason that Biden came out and said May 11th is because the Republicans are going to vote on it this week. And it gives cover to any Democrat that voted no. That's what it did.
Yeah.
Well, I voted no because the president lifted it by May 11th, trying to take it away. And when Republicans were asked, I think it was McCarthy was asked the other day, well, the president's already set the date for May 11th. Why do you need to have the vote? because we don't believe them.
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's the best.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you want. If you can't listen live, overnight to our show, when you're supposed to listen.
That's right. It's required, but if you're not compliant with our requirements, we do have acceptable options.
I just, during the break, went out and looked outside.
Yeah.
And nothing accumulating on our vehicles yet. So.
Yeah, nothing yet.
No. But. I've had this, so, I mean, I'm done with winter.
No, this is I was done before this hit. Every year, it's like once we get, if we get a significant, especially ice, snow doesn't bother me. But if we get ice, it's like, okay, this is enough. Let's move on. And apparently we will be doing just that because we're going to have, again, spring-like temps coming up into this weekend, which is great. But, yeah, I'm done. I don't need this in my life.
I don't know. Every time I go back to Buffalo, I look at my family and I say, how did I live here?
Yeah, I mean, if it were, that's the thing, is that it's if it were, because I was born in Omaha and I lived there until I was four. Then I decided to move back in with my parents. We lived in Omaha and it snowed, you know, quite a bit. And I do remember that. I played a lot out in the snow. My mom said I wouldn't even wait to put my jacket on, my warm clothes on. I would just run out the door if I saw snow. But then from the age of four on, it was Texas. And we would get some because most of that time, there was a lot of time in South Texas, but then in high school moved back up to North Texas. So, you know, we got our share of winter weather here and there. But if I lived in the north, you know, anywhere in the northern tier where snow and ice was like a regular thing.
It's too long.
And it's not just that we don't have the equipment and don't spend the money on the equipment. Because we don't get the amount of snow or winter weather that other places do. It's not just that. I mean, because I've been to Colorado, went to Colorado the week after Christmas, 1 year with my son and my nephew, and tons of snow on the ground, and the highways are clear. And that's great. You can still get around, but there's still so many things you can't do. And like in that case, fishing, I know there is ice fishing, the type of fishing I like to do, or whatever, outdoor activity or doing things outdoors. And, you know, I just like the warmer climate and always have. And
I just don't like the cold.
Yeah.
It's not about because you can still do stuff up there. It's just I don't want to do it in the cold. I just, as I've gotten older, I just and then, you know, I'm back to see Dad once a month. So I was back Thanksgiving. And they already had, remember, before Thanksgiving, they had that huge major snow, like in middle of November.
Mm-hmm.
So you finish Halloween, and then you can have snow at any time. Mm-hmm. And really until the end of March, even into April, you're like, okay, is it still going to be? And it's still only in the 40s and 50s.
Right.
It's like, well, it's just too long. And so I sort of, you know, going back there, feel it, then come back here. And we had that cold spell, the real cold spell, Christmas. But I'll tell you this, the Frizzola, as I call it, which was when we had the, you know, when we were down to minus 2 degrees below zero and winds like you can't believe and the power went out and everything else.
Coming up on 2 years ago. Yeah.
2 years ago on the 14th.
Because
it started, I think Valentine's night was the first night where we got hit big time.
Mm-hmm.
And that matched anything that I've ever dealt with in Buffalo growing up there.
Well, that same system dumped 11 inches of snow on Del Rio.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Well, it was the cold and the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't get, you know, minus 2 degrees, and then that wind was probably going
right.
30, 35, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I can still remember, I was trying everything I possibly could, you know, I realized that the power was going to go out, and I'm like, what am I going to do to my pool equipment?
Because
that ended up costing me, I think everything cost me around $4,000, and the deductible for my property insurance, $4,000.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, out of pocket. And so that's one thing I always think, you know, okay, because we keep our pools open down here. We don't close our pools.
Right.
But I did during Christmas time, and if I would have known this was going to be this long, I would have shut down my pool, you know, Saturday or Sunday, just drain the whole everything above ground. It only takes 10 minutes to do it and 10 minutes to, you know, put it back together again. And I would have done it, but I thought by now we'd be done with this, and now it's going to extend. Basically, it extended for another 36 hours,
mm-hmm.
you know, from what we originally thought it was going to be. So I'm just sick of it. I just hate the cold, and I like the warmth. And as long as the air conditioning's working, give me 105. Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but just walking out there or walking. I mean, and I do like though. I mean, it's been great because there's nothing you can do here. Yesterday, I couldn't do anything. And the day before, I went shopping to make sure I had everything. And then I just sat around the house, and there's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. Sit around the house. When am I going to sleep? Am I going into work? What's the weather going to be like? I had the fireplace on, watching TV. I'm like, it's cool. But as soon as I walked outside, I went, done.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
The temperatures haven't been that bad this time around. The temperatures I can tolerate, and the change in temperatures during the seasons, that is fine. It's just that when you get to the point of, all right, you really can't go outside, I'll go outside when it's 30 degrees and there's no ice and snow. That's fine. I'll go do things outdoors. But when you get to the point of, you know, ice on the roads and everything's just covered, I'm ready to move on quickly, you know.
But that 2 years ago where I was out checking my equipment, and I remember walking out, and I was dressed like an Eskimo, and I remember just looking up, and the wind was blowing, and it was probably, you know, minus 2 degrees below zero,
mm-hmm.
that we're not used to here. And we mean Fahrenheit to any of our Canadian listeners, not Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just looking up going, this is as bad as anything that I ever dealt with when I lived in. And I think the worst cold I ever experienced was when I lived in Rockford, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And that cold, you know, it was like minus 17 degrees. I think it was the winter of 93 going into 94. It was unbelievably
cold. See, that's where once you get below like 25 on a regular basis, and it's like it's fairly routine.
Yep.
No.
But still, I think they've moderated a little bit, but it's going to be down near zero in parts of the Northeast this coming weekend. So,
yeah.
And I just don't want to deal with it anymore.
Right.
And I don't mind, for example, I went back a couple of weekends ago and it wasn't bad. You know, you had snow on the ground and it was probably 28, 29, 30 degrees, but with no real wind. There was no wind.
Right.
And it was beautiful. You get out when there's no wind. If it's 20 degrees or it's 15 degrees, there's zero wind, mm-hmm. you go out, it's okay. And that was the kind of thing. It was between 15 and 30 degrees, but mostly in the 20s, mid-20s, and no wind. It was like, well, this is okay.
Yeah.
But the wind starts, it's like, nah, get me out of here. Here I am, just an old man complaining about winter.
Well,
that's what I become.
Yeah.
An old man on the radio complaining about wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, we used to walk 5 miles to school in snowstorms, and we liked it that way.
Of course.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. So. I am looking forward to the return to what has otherwise been a really warm or mild winter for us.
Yeah, except for Christmas.
This cold spell and the temperature drop in December, and that was really it.
Yeah, that was.
You know?
Yeah,
and
it's been pretty.
Well,
been
we were at 70 on Saturday.
Oh, I know. I was at the driving room. I was taking a golf lesson.
I was in my yard all day. You know, and it was great. I knew this weather was coming. That's why I did it. I was like, all right, here's a chance to get a little sunlight. And got some things done. And that's what I like the most, is the ability to do that. I'll still get out when it's cold, but when everything's covered in ice, it's like, all right, you really can't move.
No, you can't. And, we'll be okay by we'll be up to, 63 by Monday, so.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I don't even care if it goes on to 32 at night. Just get me into the 50s during the day.
Well, yeah, that's it. I'm actually very okay with that.
And this sort of, because all this happening, I was going to go to during the week this week, I was going to go to the stock show. That's probably done because I got too much going
actually,
on this week.
Actually, yesterday morning, they were loading in. They had, they did a live shot. One of the news stations here did a live shot, and they were pulling in trailers and loading in. And
we're talking about the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo that goes on every year.
Yeah. This is kind of stock show weather, really. I mean, you know, it seems at least once during the show, you get some kind of winter weather. And that's kind of been the history. That's why they call it stock show weather. So, yeah. But they're, you know, I don't mind the temperatures, just no ice. And we have more ice.
Oh, we got more ice coming.
Apparently about another 24 hours worth. So over the next 24 hours, we're going to get, they say, quite a bit more. Freezing rain this time, not sleet. The amount of sleet coming down yesterday at my house around 8 a.m. with thunder and lightning. It was wild. It was really wild and did not let up for a good 25 to 30 minutes.
Coming up, the FBI conducted a search of the Penn Biden Center back in November.
Oh.
We didn't hear about this from the White House. The White House never said that happened.
Right. Why not?
No transparency.
Why
there.
Is this story changing?
Yep.
It seems every week there's something new that's big.
Every Democrat votes in the House not to end the COVID emergency. And $5 million per qualified person for reparations in San Francisco. Not enough.
Told you.
Details on the way. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye, if you'd like to get in. So the House on Tuesday ignored opposition from the president and voted to end the public health emergency related to COVID-19, winning support from some House Democrats on a second bill that would end the government's requirement that federal health care workers must be vaccinated against COVID. The two bills, the Pandemic is Over Act and the Freedom for Healthcare Workers Act, were planned by Republicans last week. And late Monday, the White House announced that it will terminate the national COVID emergency on May 11th. The White House also announced the opposition to the two bills up for a vote yesterday. But Republicans pressed on anyway and easily passed both measures despite the GOP's narrow majority in the House. The Pandemic is Over Act, which would end the public health emergency, passed 220 to 210 in a vote that saw every Republican vote for it and every Democrat vote against it. Think about that. That's pretty simple. Most Americans have lived their are living their lives now, right?
Yeah.
The vast majority of Americans are living their life. It shows you how radical, again, the Democrats are. Every single Democrat voted against ending the COVID emergency.
Right. That, and we're supposed to believe that this magical date of May 11th
right,
is the key.
And again, I'm sure the thing was, well, because the president's doing it on May 11th, which gives the federal departments the time to blah, 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 blah.
Well, what it translates into is that we've got a great deal of money on the table, and we need to spend it. We need to spend.
The Freedom from Healthcare Workers Act, or For Healthcare Workers Act, not from. Freedom from Healthcare Workers.
Keep those nurses away from me.
Yeah, I'm going to stay healthy. I'm on freedom from these healthcare workers. Freedom for Healthcare Workers Act, which would end the vaccination requirement for federal healthcare workers, passed 227 to 203. With the help from seven Democrats who jumped aboard on that one.
All right.
So that was bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Got seven Democrats, bipartisanship in the works. It's just fascinating. It is really, we've talked a lot today about the culture wars, about the border and everything else. It is really amazing just how radical the Democratic Party is. Maybe not all the voters, but the party is as radical as a political party, I believe, that we've ever seen in the United States with this kind of power.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I don't think that's over-the-top rhetoric at all.
No.
The things that they believe in defy science, and they proudly promote it.
Well, because it's not even a discussion anymore. They're trying to implement this as policies, and it's And think about it. The ground game is very scary because what are they doing? They're implementing these at the local, county, and state levels. This is what they want to do. And then dare Republicans to try and block it or work to get it out of policy. And this is the, this was always going to be the play. I'm grateful we have people like Governor DeSantis in Florida that have been able to see it and say, no, we're not going to do this in our state. But it doesn't stop the left. A victory by a Governor DeSantis and the GOP in that state does not mean a victory over the agenda. They are more determined now than ever to get this stuff implemented. This is They're pretty proud of the fact that they are that this is about instilling all of this into the young minds of children in schools everywhere. Indoctrination now is proudly worn as a badge of honor by the left. They believe, and they've said it, you're too stupid to be involved in your kids' education, Eric Swalwell. These are things that they have said out loud where they, and that wasn't a quote, where they believe you have no place in your child's education. Why is that? Because you can see what's going on now. I believe that's one of the downfalls for them. One of the downfalls, I think, is a benefit, but they see it as a downfall of the whole remote learning thing, was that parents were also at home while their kids were there. So parents were sitting in the classroom with their kids.
And going, what the hell?
And saying, whoa, what is this? And it's an eye-opener for a lot of parents. I think that's a benefit. Well, we'll see how far the fight goes, but it's not over.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
So good, you know you want to listen again with our podcast, available on our app and at redeyeradioshow.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I love this story here.
All right.
This saw this in the New York Post. Former NFL star Chad Johnson was not all about the glitz and glam when he played in the NFL, which he did for 11 years. Was an all-star, star NFL wide receiver. Admitted that when he played, he never flew private jets. He could have. Mm. He said, I saved money by flying Spirit Airlines, and all the jewelry I was wearing was fake.
All right.
He said, fly private? I ain't flying private.
By the way, when you're at that level, that's an interesting point. When you're at that level and you're wearing jewelry that's fake, nobody even asks whether it's fake or not. No. They assume it's real. Yes. Because of, you know, who you are. Wow.
Put me on Spirit, exit row, window seat. That's all I need. Mm. As long as I get from point A to point B, I don't need private. He estimated he saved 83% of his salary in making those shrewd moves, like living in the Cincinnati Bengals facility as a rookie, among other things.
He just bunked there.
I get what is this, Rudy?
Right.
He goes, I never bought real anything when I was playing. Yeah. Never. What was the point? The women are going to deal with you anyway because of who you are.
Right. Yeah. I love it.
He said, he goes, well, why would I buy a $50,000 watch, an $80,000 watch?
Yeah.
You know, why is that I have to ask this question. Why is that a status symbol?
I don't know.
Whenever I watch golf, you know, all the golfers wear watches.
Right.
And they're very expensive watches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I never understood the concept. Maybe when I was young. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't need a – now, I know. I'm not talking about the new watches, the smart watches.
Watch, right.
You know, these are the basically Rolex watches that they're, you know, that they all wear. And I'm like, a watch?
Mm-hmm.
That never made sense to me ever. I never got that as a status symbol.
I guess, for some, it's jewelry, but not over the top jewelry.
Okay.
For me, it's all about functionality, you know?
It's jewelry with a purpose.
Yeah.
What's the time?
I mean, that's it. Who was it? Was it Kawhi Leonard when he first hit in the NBA and he was talking about, the story came out, hey, don't mess with my Taco Bell coupons and all these things, and he talked about how he was really, really careful with his money, you know, even as he was on the rise to stardom in the NBA. I think it was Kawhi Leonard, if I remember correctly, but it was like, you know, the word was he had a roommate, he shared an apartment, even when he could afford, you know, whatever, and then he had a bunch of, like, Taco Bell coupons or whatever and frankly, if it's Taco Bell, do you need a coupon? But he had them, you know, in a drawer, like in the kitchen. It's like, don't mess with those, you know. And I remember when Barkley came out and he was like, look, the one thing I learned was you need, you know, one car, maybe two cars, good cars to get you from A to B. What you don't need is a huge collection of cars, you know, that kind of spending, you know. So he was, and it was after he played, and it was, he was basically advising young people and young players. There's a viral video of Kevin Hart being on somebody's podcast, but the video where he's breaking it down, going, okay, here's, you know, what you do with your money, because this much is going to go to your lawyers and then your agent and then taxes. And then this is what you're left with, because everybody, you know, with his rise, it was just huge. And he said, this is what you're left with. You take half of that. You cut half of that and you put that away. You don't touch it.
Yeah.
You know, and I love seeing that kind of conversation happening, because, you know, there often is the case with fame. It's like, all right, they went from, you know, zero money to boom.
Hammer.
All the money. Oh, yeah.
Hammer. Right, I mean, right. Remember?
His entourage was a small town.
And he talked about it. He blew money left and right. Right. Next thing you know, he's bankrupt. He's got nothing.
Right.
He had to sell everything. It's like, I don't care.
And it wasn't like.
And he, by the way, he worked his butt off to get where he was. So he knew the value. That's what always got me about him. He knew the value of the dollar.
Right. Right.
Because he was working. I mean, he was peddling his records when he was, I believe he was doing stuff for the Oakland A's at that point.
Right. Right.
And so he was working his butt. He was selling records out of his car. Well, and so here's somebody who's hustled. It's like, and he admits. I mean, he admits what he did wrong. And I don't know if he ever, you know, if he ever recouped money back, because you don't really hear Hammer anymore. But I mean, he was so big, he was as big as big can be for probably a 5-year thing. But when you look at a professional athlete, when you first go in, you know in the NFL it's 4 years,
right?
The average player that actually gets on the active roster is 4 years. I was watching a video the other day, it just came up, of these young hockey players, and they're all, you know, making $1 million, probably between $1 million and $4 million. And it was amazing that, you know, and they're younger, though. I was watching, it's from the Buffalo Sabres, and they have the youngest team in the league. And these are all these guys that are like 22, 23. They share an apartment, and they showed the apartment. It's extremely bare, just a couch.
Right.
They go, we're practicing, we're traveling, we're just, you know, this is where, and they basically have a nice TV and a couch, but it was it wasn't a run-down apartment, but it was extremely bare. It was like, okay, we're just living here.
Bare minimum.
Yeah,
right.
I went, oh, okay, somebody's probably telling them. First thing that came to my mind, somebody's probably giving them their financial advice, or they've got parents, you know, that are doing it. Because we know, I mean, how many – we've seen it with professional athletes and people that may, you know, hit it, in Hollywood for a short period of time. Next thing you know, they're homeless and whatever, and it's like, how does that happen?
Right. Yeah.
No, that shouldn't happen. What's the guy? What's his name? From Happy Days. I can't. Scott Baio. You know, and he's more conservative.
Right.
And so I'll never forget when him and Henry Winkler were going back and forth on Twitter. That was just great.
Right.
But he talked about it, and you know, people critic. You don't even have a job these days. And he said, I don't have to work.
Right.
Basically, what he said was, I put my money away. I didn't go crazy with my money when I was young, and I invested it and saved it, and now I don't have to work.
Right.
And these people are like trying to get on his case. See, you don't have a Hollywood career. I don't need to work. And I'm like, what? That's the greatest response ever. I don't need to work.
It's interesting because, you know, there were a couple of people that I saw along the way that I thought, you know, as actors, if they took on like a more serious role, like if they wanted to, they could probably fit in a number of things. I saw like a Scott Baio as a cop or a lawyer or something like that, or even as a like a mafia type guy, like a mafia leader. I could see him in a role like that. He probably had a number of things along the way where it was, all right, look, this is, I'm going to be typecast for the rest of my life. You just assume it. I've never heard him say this, but I'm assuming that if you believe that, if you believe your typecasting is there and it's not going to change, then the only thing you can do is put that money away and invest.
Well, he was in 3 series.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
actually four. Yeah.
Charles in Charge.
It was in Happy Days, mm-hmm. and then Joni Loves Chachi.
Right.
And then, as you just said, Charles in Charge. Mm-hmm. And then he was also in the one with Dick Van Dyke.
Mm.
Remember where Dick Van Dyke was like a doctor who was...
What was that?
I can't think of the name of it. And where he was a doctor who did investigations on the side. We've already done Quincy.
Right.
We've done the medical examiner as basically a PI. Let's do a doctor as basically a PI.
Yeah. It's funny because I also saw in a serious role Ray Romano. Yeah. And he actually did get one in The Irishman, which was he played a lawyer that represented a mafia guy. And I thought to myself, you know, your viability, right? Like Ray Romano doesn't ever need to work again. He's far mm-hmm. from it. But your viability in any career field, you know, has to be considered, and you plan accordingly, which is basically assume that it's all over tomorrow so that you put everything away, that you've got something there long term.
There was another guy. I think he played for Washington. That Washington team in the NFL, I can't remember their name.
Mm. I think they're just called the Washington team, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in the they talked about this guy like drove a junker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he knew his career was going to be limited.
Yeah.
And so he lived way beneath his means. And he said you'd walk into the parking lot, there'd be all these fancy cars and this piece of crap. Mm-hmm. Sitting there, and that's what he drove.
Yeah.
It was like, well, you know, it gets me from here to there. It's like, I love that.
I love that when people do that. I have a friend who's tremendously successful and for years drove a Ford Escort with the rubber floor. He picked me up from the airport one time in the city where he lives, and he picks me up and he goes, you got to see this. And I said, what? He goes, look. And it's a small basic toolkit, you know, the flat toolkit mm-hmm. you keep in your car. Look at that. I said, okay. He says, I found it on the side of the road. It was free. And I'm like, wow. We go to his house. Now, his house is posh. And it sits on the shore of one of the Great Lakes, and he has a multi-car garage, the whole thing. But he came up poor, and he operates otherwise, you know, outside of the home that he bought, which is, you can argue, is, of course, a massive investment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a luxury car for his wife. He did have one collector vehicle, an old VW, that he bought from a dealership that had never been sold. It sat in the showroom for a long time. But otherwise, he didn't spend any money. I mean, he didn't spend any money. And I think, you know, if you have that, you know, that mindset, it's almost like a game, which is how I treat it sometimes, where you're trying to come in really low. Okay, how much can I cut? How much from mm-hmm. the budget can I trim? Or how can I save here? How can I not spend money on this? And you understand that being frugal isn't always easy, but it's very possible.
Yeah, I just love that story, especially when they're that young. And
I love that.
And
they
have that mindset.
They have that mindset at that
when,
age.
When all the fame is there and everything else,
yeah.
And they have the maturity to say, man, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It just,
I don't need any of that.
But I love the fake jewelry.
That's the best.
I'm a football player. I got all these jewelry. It's
all fake.
It's fake.
I love it. I love it.
I don't like his attitude. Hey, I'm Chad Johnson. I'm in the NFL.
Yeah.
Women don't really care if I wear the jewelry. They don't care.
No, really. More important than the jewelry is the uniform that he's wearing every week.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
866-90 Red Eye.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90 Red Eye.
Progressive Commercial Insurance protects truck owners with specialized coverages for heavy trucks. Get a quote in as little as 5 minutes at progressivecommercial.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, the latest on, what are we calling it now? It's not Vetgate anymore. It's not Corvettegate. It's not Garagegate anymore. It's not Bidengate. Is it DocuGate?
Whatever. I think it's just the Biden presidency.
Well, we found out that the FBI did search Biden's Penn office. It looks like the middle of November.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, I was reading Andrew McCarthy, and he said probably was the attorney out of the federal attorney out of Chicago, Lausch, who got them to do that. Because it's like, well, why aren't we, we haven't searched? What's going on?
Right, right.
But the fact is there's been no transparency there. We'll have a transparency comment from CNN. Actually asked one of the spokes people not named Kirby or Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday, so we'll get to that. Plus, just a fascinating thing going on in Georgia, where now Democrats who didn't want the All-Star game there want the DNC in 2024 to be there.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, redeyeradioshow.com, or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those weekend golf guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going?
Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.